previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
What is it that they say in New Orleans? Let the bon temps rouler.
Is this worse than jazz?
Yep. Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 28, All That Jazz. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, hey, Dave, cut the rebob.
Hi.
Cut the rebob. Hi.
Let's get into it. There's no way referencing it. We can't top that intro with the worse than jazz music. If you enjoyed / hated that, please listen to our sister podcast, Extra Hot Great, where you will occasionally get an Is This Worse Than Jazz segment where we discuss whether a pop culture item is, in fact, worse than jazz. Now let's begin with our C-plot. Cracks form between Arnie and Sam. So the Hartley House, Samantha Sanders' show, is being honored at some ceremony at the TV and Broadcasting Hall of Fame. Waiter refused to give them the rights to use your real name, Paley Center. It's a big honor. How big? Clip two.
You don't see them celebrating Knight Rider.
Well, they did that last year.
Fucking A, they did.
I wonder if there was a debate or originally if that was like, you know, they don't, you don't see them doing this to Love Boat, but then they had to cut it because it had to be a non-Aaron Spelling show that was also embarrassing.
Probably.
Anyway, yeah. Samantha's excited. Steve is proud. Chancellor is excited to see Sam, who we're told flew in for this whole thing, though we haven't heard where she's living now yet. We will find out. Claire's even come around to accepting the Chancellor and Samantha as a great couple. And Samantha's all the Chancellor talks about. Claire assumes Samantha's the same about him, but Steve thinks about it and realizes that he hasn't heard her talk about him at all very much lately. Claire doesn't get it since Samantha and the Chancellor haven't seen each other in weeks. Steve agrees that it's weird, but chalks it up to Samantha's excitement over the ceremony. And when the night arrives, the Chancellor had wanted to go as a foursome with Samantha, Claire, and Steve, but when he shows up at Claire's, he's alone because the network sent a limo for all the stars of the show because there's a pre-ceremony. There's pre-ceremony publicity that they have to do. Like, of course there is. I know they had to contrive something to break these two up, and which sucks, but like all of this, she's being completely reasonable, I feel like, and they're trying to make him seem like he's crazy, but like this is a work event. She's got work things to do.
Yeah, and he has been in town for a while and would get it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, sometimes their naivete about this town where they all live and are rich people is bizarre.
Right, but at the same time, like, you would think, you know, he's been to academic conferences where he's had obligations. You know what I mean? Like, you would think he's a Nobel Prize winner. He's smart enough to understand, like, her time is not entirely her own right now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well.
When Steve goes to the bathroom, the Chancellor admits to Claire that he didn't know this was the new plan until he got to the hotel to pick up Samantha, and since she didn't call him, and that is rude. But as they talk more, it sounds like he's got suspicions about her being interested in one of her new co-stars on the soap that she's supposedly on, so that explains where she is. She's shooting the soap in New York that we've never heard about before. And he also says she's been distant on the phone lately. And on their way out the door, Claire tells Steve that Samantha's been rude to her dad, and she is pissed. So at the ceremony, we watched the same Hartley House clip from the Chucky episode way back when, and the Chancellor is adorably wrapped. He is so cute, loving her on screen. It's really cute.
He really is cute. That clip is revolting.
It's bad. Yes. And Steve decides that Samantha's speech is the right time to tell Brandon that Claire has been icing him out all night, but maybe their problems are the Chancellor's fault. Brandon tells him not to get in the middle of it, though not in those words at first. Clip three.
I'm not your pig, not your farm, my friend.
Why? Don't try to be folksy.
No.
What is the word for failed folksiness? Fucksy? He's terrible. Seldom right and wrong again. Kill yourself.
Yeah.
I hate him so much.
Also, shut up. Like, your mother is giving a speech. This is the whole reason that you're here. Just wait until she's done. There's going to be more grab-assing to do momentarily. Whatever.
Yeah, God.
When Samantha comes off stage, the chancellor wants to dance, but she has to go to the bar and get involved in a network discussion about a new series that she might book. And he's dismayed, but understands. She promises they'll dance later, which means they won't. And as she's walking off, Steve asks if she doesn't think she should be spending more time with her date, to which she replies that he should mind his own business, which is true. And then Claire comes over to hassle Steve some more about Samantha's behavior as if that is his responsibility. And Steve defends Samantha by saying it's an industry function, which it totally is. And then the fight stops being about their parents and starts being about them. Boringly. And later, the hall is emptied out, but the chancellor is still sitting morosely at his table, waiting alone while Samantha schmoozes the network suits. Brandon offers to drive Claire and Steve home, but Claire pointedly says that she will stay. And at a nearby table, Samantha comes to tell the chancellor he's a dear for waiting. But there's another party, which Samantha forgot to tell him about. And obviously, he's in no mood for this night to continue and tells her to go on without him. She perceives that he's angry with her, or he confirms he is. She accuses him of blowing this out of proportion and trying to pick a fight, but he says actually he's been trying not to pick a fight all night, and Samantha handles it not that great in clip 4.
I knew this would happen. We come from two different worlds. You just don't understand the business.
Samantha, I may not understand your world, but I do understand common courtesy. Maybe we should face the facts.
The fact is that you are embarrassing me. And I won't stand for it.
Your mother just told my dad do something.
Do what? Mom.
Good night, Steve. I'll call you tomorrow.
Where are you going now?
I'm going to the party. And then I'm going back to New York.
Claire, where are you going?
Gonna go drive my dad home. I don't want him to be alone right now.
Well. So much for the theory of non-intervention.
Why is he saying that like stay out of it was not his advice? He's got this total I told you so attitude where it's like, no, you theory of non-intervention was your idea, idiot.
Yeah. His he also is acting like it's hilarious, like gossip that's not happening to his friend's parents. Like,
yeah,
fuck off.
But also Claire is being ridiculous. Like she's being written this way and it's totally out of character, but like do something. Like what is he supposed to do? Get back together with Claire's dad? No.
Yeah.
Anyway, back in Claire's room that night, Steve is sad about the breakup, but Claire is still bitchy, basically acting like she thinks it's Steve's fault, which he finally calls her on in clip 5.
Why are you mad at me? I didn't do anything.
Right. That's what's important. That you sleep well, secure in the knowledge that you're blameless.
Please.
I'm sleeping on the couch.
Oh, you know what? Why don't you sleep in your bed? I'll sleep on the couch.
Oh, no. Not the couch. Okay, take it easy, soundtrack. So dumb.
Well, really. And could you just, like, if this is going to be the wedge that comes between them, like, get to wedge in. Hurry up.
Honestly. Well, they're getting close. The next morning, Steve comes out to the living room where Claire is still fuming on the couch. Neither of them slept. Steve says they're not responsible for what their parents do. And Claire says he's right, but she's still snippy, saying it's pretty convenient that her dad didn't do anything. And Steve grants that Samantha was selfish and rude and everything else Claire said. Eh, kind of. So why? Claire asks, did he spend the whole night defending her? And Steve is like, she's my mom. And Claire gets choked up as she says she's sorry Steve has a screwed up relationship with his parents, but the chancellor's all Claire's got, and she won't let anyone hurt him in clip 6.
Well, you're making me think, Claire, if your father's all you've got, then where does that leave me? Huh?
Mm. Probably in LA when she moves to France. Whoops.
Yeah.
On to the B plot, Flu Fells Brandon's Best Gals. So the latest solution to hiding Jenny Garth's pregnancy is to give her the flu and keep her in bed. Apparently the virus has not attacked her baby voice, clip 7.
Oh, my whole body hurts and my head aches. I'm all stuffed up.
Poor kid. Sounds like you've said aloha to the Hawaiian flu.
I didn't do it.
Would you like to say aloha to my fist, both of you? Poor kid. Okay, bogey, take it easy.
I know we're not at our best when we're sick, but that voice has got to stop. It is so insufferable.
Oh God, it's awful. Between that and the tiny mouth, it's like, it's unsettling. Like it's past annoying and into like creepy fetish shit.
Yeah.
Like just stop.
It's gross.
Ooh, grown-ass woman.
So this flu is going around school and Brandon has good news. Clip 8.
Good news is it's short-lived.
No, it's short-lived. Tell a friend. You're welcome. Anyway, Kelly wants to go home because, she says, she gets grouchy when she's sick, but Brandon insists on her staying there where he can take care of her. And elsewhere,
infect the entire house. Brandon, go fuck yourself. Let her go home.
Yeah.
I'd put her out like a cat on the back stoop if I receive her, Valerie. Tell a friend. If you're sick, go home.
Yep. So elsewhere, Brandon has just finished telling Steve he doesn't need to sleep at Claire's because it's not that contagious when Val comes in, sick as hell. And when we meet them again, Kelly and Val are both terrible patients, super demanding and jealous of whatever attention Brandon gives the other. And so when he gets ready to go to Samantha's thing, Val ends up in the living room where we see that she and Kelly aren't too sick to snipe in clip 9.
What are you watching? Heidi. Get out of here. Oh, is she your hero? No, I think you have her confused with your hero, Heidi Fleiss. No, I don't admire anybody who gets caught.
Oh, really? I would have thought you admire someone who got paid for what you give away.
You know what, Kelly? I'm really sick of your good girl act, okay? Everybody knows that you're 10 times the tramp I was.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, I'm leaving. You two invalids play nice, huh? Try not to kill each other while I'm gone, huh?
Oh, two us and two lines. Nice work.
Okay, Dad. You must be serious. And thank you, Valerie, for finally pointing out that Kelly has fucked pretty much everyone in the gang at least once and cheated on a bunch of people. Fuck her.
Yep. So later that night, Val decides to have it out with Kelly in what is the kickoff of Retcon 97.
Oh, Jesus.
Clipton.
Why do you pretend that you don't know the real reason why I hate you so much?
Because I don't.
You know, Kel, it's so insulting. I mean, do you think I would forget something like that? We were both there.
Both where, Valerie?
Right here. It was 2 years ago. We had just gotten back from Palm Springs. The night you ruined my one chance with Brandon.
Oh, and how did I do that?
You really don't remember, do you?
I remember coming over here to talk to Brandon and finding you all over him.
No. Brandon was coming on to me. And since you claim to have forgotten, maybe I'll just refresh your little memory, okay? Like I said before, we had just gotten back from Palm Springs and Brandon and I were on the couch.
Okay, a few things before we get into this. They hated each other immediately, and it was because Val took up with first Steve and then Dylan and then both at the same time. And Kelly was still territorial about both of those guys, even though she was dating Brandon at the time.
Yeah. Also, why can't Valerie just hate Kelly on general principles like
honestly,
every other goddamn person ever born? It's not hard. Trust me.
Terrible. Okay, so then we get a black and white flashback to what was supposed to be the season 5 finale, which, as you will recall, in our world, ended with Val and Brandon making out. But in this version, their hair looks like their hair does now. And In this version, the doorbell rings just as they're getting into it, and it's Kelly at the door. It did not happen at on the show that we saw, and her hair is nothing like what her hair was. Like, they don't even try to, like, give her a wig that looks like her Marilyn Monroe hair from that finale, which is what it looked like. This is just her current hair.
Yep.
Anyway, she needs to talk to Brandon, won't let him get rid of her like he's trying to do, so he's like, don't say I didn't warn you, and motions towards Val, who's coming to the door doing up the buttons on her shirt. Kelly tightens up. Val excuses herself. Brandon follows Kelly to the porch, and then she kisses him and says she's trying to fix the biggest mistake of her life, and then I don't even know what. Clip 11.
Brandon, take me back. Please give me one more chance.
I can't. I'm in love with Valerie.
What?
I'm in love with Valerie. I have been ever since we were kids.
Brandon, you can't sleep with Valerie. If we ever meant anything to each other, I'm begging you.
Kel, come on.
No, if anything ever happened between the two of you, I don't know how I could live with myself.
Don't be crazy.
No, I am crazy. I swear, I don't know what I would do. Do you want that on your conscience?
No, I don't. Come on. It's okay. Nothing's gonna happen between me and Valerie, I promise.
That's what you think happened? That's why you hate me?
Wouldn't you?
Yes, if it were true, but that's not what happened. I didn't say any of those things.
So all that we just watched was purely Val's conjecture of this conversation that never occurred on the show.
And also, we were told what happened, which was they like started to do it, looked at each other, started laughing, went to their respective rooms, and it never came up again.
Yes, exactly. Like, this is...
Why is this happening to us, Tara? Why?
I don't know. And I'm mad about it, too. Let's get back into it so that we can put it behind us until this story gets...
Again.
Yeah. Anyway. Val doesn't believe it. She thinks that Kelly stabbed Val in the back because Kelly couldn't have Brandon for herself like Val thinks Kelly did with Tracy. So here's what Kelly says happened. Clip 12.
I wasn't there for the first part when you and Brandon were on the couch. But when I did come over, it was obvious that you two had been doing something.
Kel?
Valerie?
Well, if you two ex-lovebirds need to be alone, don't mind me.
What is it, Kel?
I'm sorry for interrupting, but I needed to talk to you.
What about?
I know I hurt you when I turned down your proposal.
Yes, you did.
And I also understand why you don't want to go back to the way things were.
Why are you telling me this?
Because, Brandon, I still love you.
Yeah, that's not too painful. Thanks.
Brandon, let me finish. I want you to be happy, even if it's not with me. And I know I gave you a hard time about Valerie because I thought that she was using you. But if you do really care about her, I won't stand in the way.
Do you mean that?
I wish we could go back to the way things were, but I can't change my decision. I want the best for you, Brandon. If that means Valerie Malone, then I guess I'll have to learn to live with it.
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm not sure what's going on right now.
Really?
Saint Kelly.
When has she ever wanted someone to be happy, even if it wasn't with her? Like, zero times. Anyway.
Yeah. No one ever actually wants that, frankly.
No, they don't.
It's just something that you say to give people guilt and then you walk off and hope your ass looks good. Just saying.
Anyway, he sent her home and said he'd call her later. Val says she doesn't believe Kelly, and Kelly doesn't care if Val believes her, but she can always ask Brandon. Cut to Brandon staying forever at the banquet, as we already know, drinking to avoid the flu hassles at home like Kelly didn't already volunteer to go to her own home, and he stopped her. Steve comes over for Brandon to bitch about Val and Kelly going after each other and tells him to stay out of it. And then Kelly comes in to see Val, saying something's still bothering her about that night. Brandon said he would call Kelly, and then he never did. And so she wants to know what happened between Val and Brandon after Kelly left. And Val's like, what do you think? Prior to this episode, as we said, the story was that they'd been fooling around, realized they were better as friends. But let's see what we're told now. Val laughs, tells Kelly to tell her what she thinks. And then we get a black and white fantasy version of how Kelly thinks it went in clip 13.
He came in from the porch, and you were waiting.
So you all done?
Yep.
Wonder how long it's going to take her to get to Dylan's.
Figure that's where she's going?
No doubt. How that blonde scored the two hottest guys in Beverly Hills is beyond me.
Word.
Oh, Dylan, console me. Take me around the world. Are you jealous?
No. She can do whatever she wants. And after the way she treated me, she's got no right to tell me who I can be with.
And who's that?
Like you don't know.
I mean, two hottest guys in Beverly Hills. Really?
For something that never actually happened, we really watched them kiss for a while. And Val sarcastically says that's exactly what happened, word for word. Kelly must have been listening at the door. So then Kelly asks, why did Val say Kelly ruined Val's big night with Brandon? And if nothing actually happened, then Val was the one who ruined it. And Val snaps. that Kelly knows full well that Val and Brandon didn't fuck, so why is she rubbing it in? And Kelly, in her most hateful smug face, learned from Brandon, says she didn't know that, actually, and thanks, Val. And Val doesn't care what Kelly said on the porch. She knows it's Kelly's fault that Brandon and Val didn't fuck. Clip 14.
I mean, after you left, I tried everything to get Brandon to sleep with me, and he wouldn't. I mean, he said it was because we were like brother and sister, but I know it was you. I mean, he was the love of my life, and you screwed it up for me.
See, that's your problem, Valerie. First, Tom was the love of your life. Then Colin was the love of your life. Now it's Brandon. You do so much lying, you don't even know what it's like to tell the truth anymore.
No, you just can't deal with how close Brandon and I are.
No, I think you have that a little backwards. It's you who can't deal with me and Brandon.
Then why are you trying to take away the only family I have left?
First, he's your lover, and then he's your family. I think you have that confused there. Those two things don't go together.
Get out.
With pleasure.
Since we can't be on either of their sides, don't waste our fucking time with this retcon, because nobody cares.
Right. And, like, Val has not been trying to get Brandon to have sex with her in a while. Like, she's moved on. So the bringing this up again is just so much, you know, treading water. It's really dumb.
Yep.
So Brandon comes home to find Kelly still awake and chipper, and she pulls him in for a kiss like she didn't just kill a box of Kleenex that morning. Classic considerate Kelly. He asks what the kiss is for, and she says it's for never sleeping with Val. Barf. The next morning, Val is feeling better, and Brandon is glad that Val and Kelly talked. Or is he? They discuss that in clip 15.
Yeah, I was kind of worried that I went too far. I really lost my temper.
Well, what did you tell her?
Brandon, relax. I told her nothing ever happened between us. It's the truth, isn't it?
Yes, that is the truth. You want some coffee?
No, actually, I'm gonna get to the club. Is Kelly still asleep?
Yeah.
You know, Brandon, Kelly and I have had our ups and downs, but I think I'm really gonna miss her next year.
What do you mean?
Well, next year, in New York.
You're going to New York?
No, not me. Kelly is. She applied to grad school at Columbia. Didn't you know?
No, oh, yeah. Yeah, I knew that. It just slipped my mind, that's all.
Uh-huh.
Right, yeah. We'll see ya.
Oh, my God. Chew with your mouth closed.
And get better at lying. You live with Val, honestly.
Well, and get better at spotting obvious lies, because like Columbia is going to like even let Kelly work there as a janitor, given how much school she's missed and how shitty she is at psychology.
Yeah.
Hello.
Well, that part is also supposedly true and laughable. We'll get to it. Yeah. But in the meantime,
sigh.
Then fucking Parker Lewis is rolling up at the Peach Pit after dark, introducing himself to Val as Derek Driscoll. But let's be real. There's no way we're calling him that.
No.
Parker Lewis is from Bill Taylor Investments. Val says she called Bill, but Parker Lewis says that Bill is in Kuala Lumpur. Will Parker Lewis do? Of course. Parker Lewis can't lose. He asks how she happened to approach Bill's company. Val says that Kelly is one of her good friends. Parker Lewis says she must know Bill well then, and Val says they've never met, but that she's eager to get to know him. And Parker Lewis is basically like, that's not on the table, in a very polite way. He blah blahs about money, but since there are some risks is one of the first things he says, we know it's some kind of shady shit, whatever it is. Val says she's never been one to shy away from risk. When could she meet Bill? Very soon! Fake smiles all around, which you can see in the visual aids. And then Brandon comes home with fake pleasantries that soon turn into confrontation in clip 16.
Hey, how's the flu?
Oh, a lot better, but I thought I should take one more day, you know.
Sure you can afford that? I hear Columbia's pretty tough on attendance.
What?
Columbia University, New York City. It's where you're going to graduate school, isn't it?
What are you talking about, Brandon?
Didn't you apply there?
Yes.
Did you get accepted?
Yes.
Yes.
When were you going to tell me?
There's not really a lot to tell. I applied. They accepted me.
This was all long before you and Tracy ever broke up. I'm not going to New York now. I'm not going anywhere.
Okay.
How did you know about this anyway?
Valerie told me, and I believed her.
She must have read it in my journal. How much more proof do you need, Brandon?
Proof about what?
I've tried everything I know to make it work with Valerie, and it's not working.
So what do you want me to do about it?
Kill yourself?
Know. But both of us cannot live in this house.
Then kill yourselves!
Come on, she's like family to me. Don't make me do this.
I mean, I kind of see Brandon's point. Like, if she got accepted, but she wasn't going to go, like, why wouldn't she have told him that? Like, well, this just makes her look super shady.
Yeah, and it's a big fucking deal. Like,
yeah,
if she's been accepted, like, if she were even applying, everybody in the gang would have known about it, Tracy mm-hmm. or not. Mm-hmm. And if you get in, like, it's a good school.
Yeah.
But now I'm not going. Like, you're not going, rich girl, to an Ivy League grad right. program. Okay.
You're not going because you got back with Brandon 3 days ago? Oh, good. Good thinking.
Yeah, just take him with you. He'll fit in the overhead compartment.
But he's got his dumb scholarship that we forgot about in that whole episode with Hong Kong. Whoops.
Oh, I'm sure it's portable. Who cares?
Yeah, that's true. Anyway... Let's wrap things up with our A plot. Who dat trying to bone Donna? So Donna finished her project. Thank you so much for her hated class early, which is excellent timing because David has tickets to a great club in New Orleans. She tells him she has to present the project in class tomorrow, but he says he can get her back to LA in time. Already, this is a total shit show of a plot line, although at least now we know why we were told last time about Donna's brutal Professor Langley for when this blows up in her face. So how did this New Orleans plan even...
I wish we'd been reminded how time zones work, because then David would understand it. Didn't mm-hmm. happen.
Mm-mm. So how did this New Orleans plan come about? Well, David booked Monica for the Peach Pit After Dark, I doubt it, and her people are flying him out first class and getting him a hotel room so they can discuss details of the booking. Nope to all of this that could have been worked out over the
called
phone.
Called a telephone. Yes, exactly.
God. Anyway, David, who's never cared about school at all, tells Donna he really wants to go with her. And Donna, whose biggest fault, according to Kelly in the last episode, is that she cares too much about her grades, lets him talk her into it, even though this is a preposterous idea. As a grade grubber, I am disgusted. Donna, but Ditto. David is psyched and makes... Pardon?
Ditto.
Yeah, okay, good. I was pretty sure we were on the same side here. But David is psyched, makes his dumbest puppet face, which you can see in the visual aids. And we also see he is armed with condoms. Cut to Donna's hell class, where bitchy alpha sister Ellen has just finished presenting. And oh my God, bitchy Professor Langley is Big Booty Trudy from Miami Vice. If you have not listened to Extra Hot Great, please go back a couple of episodes to where we discussed the Miami Vice episode Missing Time for the Nonak, because it's extremely important and she had a huge role and a huge butt. So she immediately starts shitting on Ellen's project. Class ends and Donna rushes up to tell Ellen she thought it was great, which she maybe should have done in the hall, because Professor Langley stops everyone who's leaving to say this. Clip 17.
Pretty cool.
I must say, I am very disappointed with the general level of presentations on these projects. Miss Martin, you're next, am I right?
Yes.
Then I wouldn't waste time chattering if I were you. You have to conserve your energy. You'll probably be up all night completing the assignment. That's if you've even begun.
Actually, Professor Langley, I've already finished. I'll be ready for tomorrow.
Good. Looking forward to it.
Thanks.
This is the kind of prof I would be. You're all terrible. Good luck.
Yeah, but like only on TV are college professors this invested in like embarrassing their students. Like professors ain't got time for that.
No, they don't care. Yeah.
But it's happening to Donna.
They'll say it in your grade.
I'm with it.
Indeed. So David grabs Dawn in the hall to take her to the airport. And when she tries to tell him she's not sure she's ready for her presentation tomorrow after all, he's not trying to hear it and just wants to do his thing. She pouts at him. It's gross. I made a pic. There's a pic of it in the visual aids. And he is kissing her to shut her up when Professor Langley comes out to scowl at them in disgust for us all. Yes, there's a gif also in the visual aids. Thank God. So they make it to New Orleans and check into their hotel room. Dawn is about to go freshen up for their dinner reservations when David has to make it weird, but also accidentally declare his expectations in clip 18.
Look, I just want you to know that I tried to get a room with twin beds in it, but they didn't have any.
That's okay.
Clark said not too many people request them. I guess that's just what type of city this is.
Oh, it'll be fine. It's not like we haven't shared a bed before.
This music. That's him getting the condoms out and showing us again.
Going on. It's still going on. Doinkily.
Also, they are B-Sure brand condoms, which I assume are from the same makers as the 4-Tell pregnancy test, which we're also about to see in the next episode.
Yeah, they are using apostrophes to pluralize things. So cool. Mm-hmm. Good job, props.
Yep. Yep. So after dinner, they meet Monica's manager at the club, and Donna is so into her hurricane, the cocktail, that the manager has to warn her to be careful with them. And it seems like she's not completely shit-faced when we see her next, but she is blithering like an idiot, commenting that the New Orleans houses seem plain from the outside, but inside they're full of private wonders. So she's hot and horny and sticks her tongue down David's throat right there next to the horse-drawn carriage they're going to take back to their hotel at 1 million o'clock. Like, what is sexier than horse manure? Nothing. Back in the room, Donna's lying on her back with David on top of her, making out and whispering that she loves David so much, but apparently she can feel his boner because she stops him and he huffs off her in clip 19.
Great. You can't go through with it.
I'm sorry.
Donna.
I thought I could. I really did.
What's wrong?
You suck.
I'm scared. It's just that we've waited so long. I don't know what's right anymore.
I thought you wanted to.
I did. I do. I do.
But not with you.
Just not now. Not this way.
It's fine. I have to be more patient. I mean, I'm sure our wedding night will be too soon, but, you know, maybe after a couple years of marriage. Sorry. I know it's not funny.
Believe me, I know. And I'm sorry. I really thought that I could.
I don't know what else I have to prove to you, you know? We love each other. We're in a committed relationship. We're in the most romantic city in America. And I've got condoms in the drawer. Just tell me what I need to do. Just tell me when.
Kill yourself right now.
I wish I knew the answer.
Okay, is he supposed to be sighing all that time, or is he still panting? Because if it's panting, do more cardio.
Seriously. Oh my God.
It's like 3 minutes into the scene and he's still like,
I mean,
like, you weren't climbing a flight of stairs.
I know. In his defense, it takes like 3 weeks to even walk out of his pants. So he's probably exhausted. But David, I will say this. This is actually a pretty good scene for Tori Spelling. Like, it's pretty good acting. But here's the problem. David is the problem. Like, she doesn't want to do it. Because you're a terrible asshole Muppet who doesn't understand that, like, her Catholic beliefs, like, you don't move that ball, as it were, up and down the field. Like,
yeah,
it's yeah, no. Go jerk off with razor
honestly,
blades.
Honestly, and that's like he just. Right, but he seems to have some idea of, like, well, she'll grow out of it eventually. And admittedly, like, some people do as they get older, like, you know, they no longer have the same beliefs that were indoctrinated into them when they were kids. But she still does. So, like, that's the end. Why are you having this conversation, this fight for, like, the 50th time since you've met her?
Yeah.
And found out that this is her plan? Like, stop expecting something that she's not going to give, and then maybe you'll be pleasantly surprised if she changes her mind.
Yeah. Ugh.
Anyway, then it's morning. We see David slept on the stupid little love seat like a crybaby. And in bed, Donna rolls over and picks up the alarm clock. And you're not going to believe this if you've never seen a TV show before, but they overslept. So Donna makes it to class. As everyone's leaving, Professor Langley is thrilled to be proven right in her belief that Donna is a fuck up, and Donna apologizes. Professor Langley is in no mood in clip 20.
Spoiler.
Sorry. I don't have a clip 20, guys.
Oh.
What?
I don't have a clip 20. Hang on. This is exciting real-time podcasting. Will it make its way into the end? Let's see.
You've outdone yourself. I mean, you've surpassed even your own usual meager contribution. Not only did you not do the assignment, you didn't have the courtesy to show up.
But I did do it. It's right here.
Oh, and now you're going to tell me the tragic reason behind your inability to show me and your classmates the teeniest shred of courtesy. Not to mention professional behavior.
It was an accident.
What was an accident?
See... I missed my flight this morning, and I couldn't get another one.
Never mind. I don't want to hear about it.
Professor Langley, I am ready to present my project anytime you want me to.
I'm afraid that's not possible.
But it's all done. I've worked for weeks on this.
And that's no concern to me now. The real world, Miss Martin, has deadlines, and you've blown yours.
Wait, I can't fail this class. I need to graduate.
Then I suggest you do well on your final. That's your last chance.
And that's why you always put out.
I love how that clip ended up being accidentally Professor Langley dragging Dave for not having the clip ready.
I guess that means I have to keep all that in now.
Yes, you do. This is Donna Martin graduates all over again. Uh-huh. Like, yes, a reasonable person could look at this situation and be like, well, okay, whatever, I'll give you another chance. But she's under no obligation to do that, Professor Langley. Like, she had a time, she missed it. She made the decision to go to New Orleans, even though it's a completely stupid idea, the night before she has a huge presentation. Like, Donna... eat your mistakes. This is what happens.
Yeah.
Also, sidebar, doesn't New Orleans seem like just the worst place in the world?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't.
Sorry, New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's like a petri dish of terribleness.
Yeah, like they're saying it's the most romantic city in America. Like, yeah. I don't think so. I think it's where you go if you want to get chlamydia from what I've seen, but whatever.
And that's how Donna we got 78 anyway. Angry tweets from Annabeth Chow.
Look, San Francisco's worse. Don't get me wrong. Oh, see, I fixed it.
But obviously the most romantic city in the United States is whatever city currently boasts the most soup plantations.
That's true. Oh, soup plantations.
That might be Houston or Dallas.
Oh, boy.
Not sure.
Beautiful Houston.
/ sweet tomatoes.
Not human at all. All right. Anyway, let's wrap it up now that we shat on.
Wait, what other cities don't we like?
And Southeast with our MVP. Langley.
Soup plantation.
Soup plantation. This episode was so shitty and boring that I forgot who even was in it. Yeah, Langley. That's good.
Anytime Donna gets shat on, it makes me happy. Least valuable player.
The city you live in.
Insert your hometown here.
Atlanta.
I want to say David because he's such a dick, but Donna, you never should have gone on this trip in the first place. All of this is your own stupid fault.
Kelly.
Yeah, that's fair. And a user submitted challenge. This one is, in fact, a colleague submitted challenge from at Kim Reed from our sister podcast, Little House on the Podcast.
Also the first challenger of this podcast.
That's right.
Who gave us Mad, that's Bad, right. And Dangerous to Know.
She's back. This time she wants us to list 5 ways Donna's storyline might be different if she weren't played by a spelling. I saved this one for when Donna was in the A plot. Let's go.
She'd be fucking.
Yeah, she would. Number 2, she would have had a more interesting failing than too worried about school, judging from the last episode that carried over into this one.
She would have not been allowed to graduate with her class and would have had to walk like in some teeny classroom in August after getting drunk at prom.
Yeah, we probably wouldn't be expected to take her side over the mean professors like I feel like we're supposed to here. She'd have flashed her boobs in New Orleens, whether it was Mardi Gras or not.
Yeah, true. That's an excellent point.
That makes 5.
Next time on Again With This, Claire tests Steve's patience with yet another dead mom sulkathon. Val tests David's no boning resolve when she manipulates him into buying her share of the club. And Kelly tests positive for fetus, and everyone's going to be a bitch about it, not least our visual aids for that and every other previously.tv episode. Excuse me, Again With This episode. Had a long week. You can find that at previously.tv. You can follow our site on Twitter at previously.tv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm Actress Bullshit Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Chancellor Digest cover girl Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Knight Rider Celebration Planner David T. Cole, and he is on Twitter at Glarb. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.